Constant Wonder Kids is a Constant Wonder podcast.
Hi, Wonder Kids. It's Paige. Do you know what it means to be curious? When someone's curious, they want to learn more about something that catches their interest. What are you curious about? Maybe you're interested in knowing more about how astronauts get to the moon, or maybe you want to learn about how veterinarians take care of puppies. I'm super curious about plants, animals, and the people who love the natural world. So I guess that's why this podcast exists. Curiosity is a powerful thing, and when you put energy into discovering the topics you're curious about, amazing things can happen. That's definitely true for our guest today. He's a curious guy, and most of his curiosity has been focused on one animal in particular, the seahorse.
I can literally go in the water every single dive I do, and I'll see a bit of behaviour that the seahorse has done that I've probably never seen before. Or I might see the same bit of behaviour that I've seen before, and I think, why? Why is it doing that? Why has it changed subtly from what the last time I saw it?
This is Neil Garrick Maidment. He's a seahorse expert and the founder of the Seahorse Trust, an organization in his home of Exeter, England. As you can tell, Neil's experiences with seahorses are fueled by a desire to find out more about these unique underwater creatures. He's been working with seahorses since he was a teenager, enlisted to help at the local aquarium.
I was 14 at the time, so quite some time ago, and I started working with a seahorse. I was working in the local seashore aquarium, and the chap who owned it was a lovely man called Les Jackman, and Les was my mentor. He had these seahorses come in and they were breeding, but he couldn't keep the babies alive. So he said to me, look, have a go, see if you can get them to survive, see if you can get them to breed and go up to maturity and stuff like that. I kept it very simple. I kept the seahorses in a very simple type of aquarium. I had a lot of current moving in the water, so the seahorses were constantly moving around. I got food from the local sea, so I sieved out plankton. I got the bigger food for the adult seahorses when they eventually grew, and I just kept it very, very simple. Here we are, 50 sort of odd years later, and I've literally bred to maturity hundreds of thousands of seahorses by keeping it simple.
Wow, hundreds of thousands of seahorses. That sure is a lot, and it's even more incredible when you learn that Neil wasn't just taking care of seahorses at the aquarium. As he got better and better at caring for seahorses, he started taking work home with him.
When I started working with the seahorses, things built up and I started to have one tank, then two tanks, and as you bred more seahorses, three tanks, four tanks, to eventually it did overwhelm the house. We ended up with 26 seahorse tanks, plus all the tanks for the food for the seahorses. And so you would literally come into the hallway, tanks in there, then you would go down to the basement and the tanks all over the place down there. And that's where the main area was. That's where I kept the live food for the seahorses. That's where I bred the baby seahorses. A couple of tanks elsewhere in their house on landings and all the rest of it. It looked like a proper laboratory, to be honest. We had everything everywhere, lots of water. So yeah, quite crazy it was.
Imagine filling your house with tanks and tanks of seahorses. That sounds cool, but kind of chaotic. So it's no wonder that Neil eventually found a different place to keep his seahorses.
That led on to us starting our very first public aquarium, which was the world's first seahorse aquarium of its kind. Specialist centre here in Exeter, where I actually live now. And we transferred all those tanks that we had at home, much to the relief of everybody because it was taking up so much room. And we moved into our own public aquarium. We had people literally coming from all over the world to see our collection, from America, Australia, Belgium, Germany, everywhere they were coming. And even though it was a very small aquarium, we had about 46,000 visitors a year, which was not bad for a very small aquarium.
In addition to taking care of the seahorses in his aquarium, Neil also spent a lot of time visiting seahorses in the wild. Now, when you think of seahorses, where do you imagine them living? Before I heard about Neil, I would have assumed that seahorses are tropical fish that would live on coral reefs near Hawaii or Australia. But Neil lives in England, which is part of the United Kingdom. How is he seeing seahorses in the wild over there?
Everybody knows this beautiful horse-shaped fish, very different to other fishes. Everybody said, oh no, they're tropical species. And one of the things that I've discovered over the last couple of years is we actually have seahorses, not just here in the UK, all the way up to Scotland, but in Denmark, Norway, Sweden, quite cold waters. And a couple of years ago, there was a sighting over in Canada as well. By running surveys, you get to understand their distribution, population numbers, what's going on in the environment. So this animal that's supposedly very tropical, that lives on coral reefs, doesn't. It lives in a wide variety of stuff. So the surveys allows us to understand individual animals, their distribution, and what's actually going on in the wild.
By running surveys and documenting different divers' sightings of seahorses, Neil was able to prove that there were plenty of these little guys living in the United Kingdom. But there were lots of people who still weren't convinced.
Even the authorities, you know, the authorities whose job it is to protect seahorses and protect wildlife in our country, didn't believe us. The way we proved it was just showing them the photographs, showing them the video, getting out there, talking to people. And the reaction even now, people say, no, they just don't exist. They're a mythical creature. They've been Disney-fied, to be honest, because everybody thinks they're just a creature from Little Mermaid or Finding Nemo or something like that. But they're actually a true, amazing animal, from the tiniest ones to the biggest ones.
The fact that people had a hard time believing that, one, seahorses existed, and two, they existed in British waters was actually a huge challenge for Neil, because if people don't know about the seahorses, they can't protect them.
The two species we have here in the UK, they are quite important to me as individual species because of the amount of work that I've done with them. The fact that I managed to get them protected in 2008 after a six-year battle with the authorities to try and get them protected, and it was a battle. Even though I had data to prove they were here and all the rest of it, it was trying to convince them. It was really difficult to convince them that they were here.
While Neil was eventually able to convince the British authorities to protect their local species of seahorses through persistence and showing proof, he found that the best way to help people know about the reality of seahorses was to take them diving into the water themselves.
We've had several volunteers that come out with us, and I just know from talking to them, they don't actually believe we'll ever find a seahorse. They just think they're mythical and all the rest of it. But it's the same feeling I get even now whenever I see a seahorse in the wild. It's that wow, you know, they're such an incredible animal. And you very often hear people screaming underwater because they've seen a seahorse, shouting, it's a seahorse, it's a seahorse. You know, how they don't drown, I'll never know. But yeah, they get really excited. And it is an amazing thing to see because you're going through the seagrass or the different areas where the seahorses live, and suddenly you see this shape and you think, how is it we never saw them before? They're so distinctly seahorse shaped that you think, how did I miss that? How did I not see them? And they are perfectly camouflaged. They're fantastic.
This seahorse camouflage can make them super difficult to spot. On a recent dive, Neil had to help his friends see the seahorses that were right in front of them.
We went down there with the idea that there probably wouldn't be seahorses there because it didn't seem as though it was the right sort of place. When you're looking for seahorses, you tend to swim along on your side. So you don't swim horizontally, you swim on your side, looking at the seagrass or wherever they are. And then suddenly it was there, that classic horse head shape, just sticking out just behind a seagrass leaf. And it looked so obvious when I saw it. But I can imagine lots of people would have just swam past and not even known it was there. In fact, the two dive buddies I had with me, who are very good at spotting seahorses, I had to literally put their fingers right next to the seahorse to get them to realise it was there in front of them, which is quite surprising because they weren't small. I mean, the first one we saw was probably about 4.5-5 inches from the top of the head to the end of the tail. So they're not a little animal. When a seahorse is in amongst the seagrass and it turns its back to you, it looks, because the colour is very similar, it looks like a bit of seagrass and it just literally vanishes in front of you. We've had a group of divers watching a seahorse, and in front of all of us, we talked about it afterwards, the seahorse just vanished. Next minute, we saw it coming out about 4 or 5 feet away through the seagrass. It literally turned, vanished into the seagrass, and came out beyond us.
In addition to their incredible camouflage skills, seahorses also have unusual patterns when it comes to mating or having baby seahorses.
The males are quite amazing. They are literally the only animal in the animal kingdom where a male will get truly pregnant. He has a brood pouch hanging underneath his belly. The female will actually put the eggs inside him, and very much like a mammal, he has a placenta, so a lining inside the pouch. The eggs embed into the lining of the pouch, and through that placenta, he gives food, oxygen, blood, everything it needs for the babies to actually survive. They start to have contractions, and the contractions can go on for 12 hours or so. And then at the final moment, the male gives birth to these perfectly formed miniature seahorses that actually just swim off. And that's it. That's the end of his parental care. But I always think that the seahorse male is not very bright, because within 24 hours, he's normally pregnant again. So he just keeps doing it time and time again.
Because seahorses have such unique abilities and patterns, it's no wonder Neil's curiosity keeps pulling him into the water to observe seahorses in the wild over and over again.
Every time I go for a dive with a seahorse, and bearing in mind I can be, you know, hour and a half, 2 hours sitting with one seahorse or a couple of seahorses, it makes me really start to think, what's going on in there? Why are they doing this? Why are they doing that? And even after all this long period of time, we know the basics about seahorses, but we don't know the real intricacies. There's a lot more things to learn about them. I mean, literally every dive I go on, I learn something new. Our last dive, we were in a different area that we don't normally study, and we were in seagrass, and we found a short-snouted seahorse. Well, normally it's the spiny seahorse that lives there, not the short-snouted. And then started to look around, and we found two or three others, and it made me start to question, well, why were they there but not in other areas of similar sort of habitat? So yeah, literally every time. And when you watch them move and swim and feed and sort of do their courtship display underwater, it truly is remarkable.
With so much more to discover about seahorses, you can bet that Neil will continue diving in the ocean and stocking his aquarium tanks for a long time. That's what you do when you're curious. You keep on learning until you know everything you can. One more thing, Wonder Kids. We're so glad that you've been listening to Season 2 and coloring along with the Phenology Wheel coloring page available on our website. Now that we're getting to the last couple of episodes, we'd love to see pictures of your Phenology Wheels. With help from a grown-up, you can send a picture of your coloring page, or any other Constant Wonder Kids-themed art you've done, to our email constantwonder@byu.edu. We might even put your art up on our website. I can't wait to see what you've come up with.
Just a word or two now for parents. I'm Marcus Smith, host of Constant Wonder, the podcast from which Constant Wonder Kids originates. Constant Wonder, the original version produced for grown-ups, contains a whole lot of great stuff for kids, but there's rich detail of great interest to grown-ups as well. We suspect you might want to hear the original version of this installment. It's devoted to seahorses and their many admirers. If you want to hear the full presentation, just find Constant Wonder wherever you get your podcasts. It's called How to Save the Elusive Seahorse. I actually think you're going to have interest in much more than a single episode of our podcast. Who doesn't value and want to nourish and enlarge our sense of wonder? be sure to subscribe to Constant Wonder on your favorite platform. Constant Wonder Kids was produced by Paige Crumperman Darrington, with sound design by Mitchell Towsley. Tenery Taylor is the executive producer. Constant Wonder Kids is a production of BYU Radio.